Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle.
All right, it is that time of the year where we are off to a pretty decent start, a careful start to 2021. In fact, to start us off, we've got the latest Monetary Authority of Singapore survey of professional forecasters. Singapore is expecting a positive growth trajectory, with the economy forecasted to expand by 5.5% this year.
Yeah, the pace of growth may be higher if there is successful global deployment of COVID-19 vaccines. And of course, secondly, Singapore has reached a critical milestone in its fight against COVID-19 as the nation enters phase three, safe nation, from the 28th of December 2020.
Yes, gatherings in aid. Haven't we been enjoying it? Thirdly, the Singapore government has made plans to make available the COVID-19 vaccine to every Singaporean and Singapore long-term resident by the end of this year. That's definitely going to further boost confidence locally, regionally, and globally.
But of course, there's always more work to be done, and there's more to be done on the road to recovery. With Budget 2021 happening on February 16th, what does Deloitte Singapore have in their wish list?
On the line to talk to us about that and more is Rohan Solapukar, the tax partner Deloitte Singapore. Rohan, good morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Good morning to all of you.
Just like that, it's time for yet another budget. I suppose to set some context, Rohan, how should we view this year's budget? Last year, when budget was about to come out, it was all these COVID-19 cases rising. We were worried that it would happen here in Singapore. It did. We had circuit breaker. And the measures were targeted at fighting COVID-19. Do we look at 2021 as measures post-COVID-19, or are we still in that similar state of mind?
I think we are in a sort of a mixed sort of situation where we are trying to push the economy, continuing our push towards innovation, technology, and making Singapore the innovative hub that it wants to be. On the other hand, from a COVID perspective, we had about four budgets, if I'm not mistaken, last year, where we had at various points of time, the government intervened, rightly so, to make sure that businesses managed to survive and stay afloat. But having said that, they've managed that outstandingly, done a very good job. And I think in 2021, we should see a little bit of coming down from a COVID situation and support for companies there. Albeit there might be some additional support for industries such as aviation and hospitality, which should continue. But I think the thrust should be on a couple of points. One is, how do we sort of continue our journey towards innovation and technology? Secondly, how do we continue making Singapore a hub, whether it's from origin or, from a new supply chain perspective? Thirdly, how do we start, look at Singapore companies going international and expanding more overseas, given that on the backdrop of COVID-19, we might see a few M&As happening, right? So how do we sort of encourage Singaporean companies to go overseas? I think those are the three sort of broad areas of push points which we would like to see happening in the budget this year.
Wow, Rohan, they certainly sound like some really exciting and ambitious plans for the coming year. But I want to get right down into, the day-to-day stuff that people have had to think about in 2020, even though we want to leave that year behind. One of the big focus areas was job support and the job support scheme. So what's being proposed this year for JSS? Should it be extended? Should there be a more targeted approach, would you say?
I would definitely say that there should be a more targeted approach. While last year was more of a blanket approach, and that was to make sure that, our focus was to make sure that individuals and people don't lose their jobs. That was first. Secondly, the companies that were supporting all of this had adequate liquidity and cash coming in. So in a sense, it was benefit given by the government, relief given by the government in order to achieve these two objectives. We've gone past a sort of a hump by December, right? That's when phase three is opened up. We're opening up the economy slowly. We're seeing companies, people going back to work, albeit in a phased manner. So in my own view, and I think we should start looking at the GSS towards targeted industries, which is, as I said, it should be looked at aviation and hospitality, because those are the two industries which are really affected. And when I say hospitality, it could be hospitality and tourism in that broader brush and broader context. Rather than having it more on a for everyone, I think it should be more targeted.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Another interesting thing was the carryback relief system that was enhanced for Budget 2020. So businesses, basically, they may elect to carry back qualifying deductions for the year of assessment 2020 up to three immediate preceding year of assessments. The cap of 100,000 in qualifying conditions, of course, remain unchanged. On this theme of, you know, more targeted approach or enhancements, what kind of enhancements could we potentially get with regard to the carryback relief for year of assessment 2021?
Well, the way we look at it, so, you know, what carryback essentially does is if you've got losses that you've got in the current year, basically you can utilize those losses and set them off against profits of the past years in which you've paid tax. So essentially, it's giving liquidity back to companies. It's putting cash back into the pocket of the companies. So the question is that be the objective? Why sort of restricted to 100,000 and why sort of restricted to 3 years, right? If you can, perhaps, you know, as a wish list, if I wanted a wish list, it should be sort of, there should be no cap, monetary cap on it. So the cap of 100,000 should be, removed. And you should perhaps increase 3 years to 5 years. Because then, and you know, and this is largely to also facilitate SMEs. Okay. Because 2020, when you look at the year 2020, a large number of companies, including SMEs, might have losses. They're not going to really have tax profits, and they may have losses. So if I can utilize some of these losses and carry them back to the past where I've had profits, I can actually get a refund back from the IRS. And that's actually going to be cash coming into these companies, right? It's actual cash which comes in, which is going to increase liquidity for the companies. So in a sense, instead of having a program which is like a GSS, where the government is actually sort of subsidizing salaries and wages costs coming in, this is another mechanism, but you have an ability to carry back your losses and for the IRS to give a refund. Now, of course, the question is whether IRS is willing to, you know, indefinite carry back on these losses.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's a different story. Let's talk about M&A, because you mentioned this earlier. So it's expected to rebound in 2021 in tandem with anticipated economic growth, not just here, but in other parts of the world. So how would the liberalisation of some of the existing conditions for M&A allowances help Singapore-based businesses to consolidate and then expand their presence in just the way you were enthusiastically talking about earlier?
Right. So, you know, if you look at 2020, which is a year either to be forgotten or to be remembered lifelong, right, it's going to be a sort of a watershed year. And that's going to give a opportunity for companies to sort of consolidate, restructure, and go out and acquire companies because you might get good valuation. Now, Singapore has an M&A allowance, which basically encourages Singaporean companies to go out and make acquisitions. And as they make acquisitions, there is a sort of a relief that is given to them. But there are certain conditions which actually make this M&A allowance a little bit more stringent. For example, there is a condition which says that the consideration on this acquisition has to be paid within 6 months. And, you know, some of these conditions that are imposed in order to get this M&A allowance are pretty stringent. So our suggestion is to do away with these allowances, with these conditions. Or perhaps let the IRS have the sort of flexibility and liberty to, on its own, on a case-by-case basis, to be flexible enough to waive all these conditions. That, to my mind, would be a sort of a positive which comes into the company and to the regulatory system in Singapore, which would actually encourage these companies to go out and make these acquisitions. Hmm. So I think some of these conditions need to be relooked at. They were important. You know, these conditions have been introduced a couple of years ago, of course, when there was no COVID. In the context of COVID, perhaps these conditions need to be relooked at. If need be, they could be relooked at for a couple of years itself, which is 21, 22, and then come back to original.
Okay. Rohan, I want to shift focus to Deloitte's tax proposals on strengthening the IP and innovation ecosystem. First, I'm going to assume that the focus on IP and innovation is really in the context of COVID-19, the need for more innovation. Would I be right to say that?
That is correct.
So can you run us through some of these proposals and how they're going to, you know, promote, you know, economic development via IP and in the innovation ecosystem?
Right. And, you know, that's an extremely broad-ended question, and I will sort of run you through some of these. So, because, you know, our innovation sort of allowances or benefits that are there in the tax system are spread out, are spread across various sort of regulations. And
okay.
Let me start with the very basic, right? So there's a particular section which sort of gives you an writing down allowance. Writing down the allowance is like a sort of a depreciation or a capital allowance claim.
Okay.
So there is a particular section which says that if you acquire, if there's a Singaporean company which acquires the legal and economic ownership of certain IP, then you get a writing down allowance, which can be over 5 years, 10 years, or 25 years.
Mm.
A couple of conditions that come in there. Firstly, you need to be the legal and the economic owner of that. That's the first condition. And secondly, the second condition that is there is that in the event that you are not perhaps the legal owner, but you're only the economic owner, then you can go back to the Economic Development Board and sort of get a waiver of this condition.
Okay.
Now, in today's environment, the question that comes up very often is, why do you need legal and economic ownership? Economic ownership itself should be sufficient. And that is the reason why, perhaps that's the reason how you can push innovation to Singapore. There is really no need to have a legal ownership. So firstly, the first condition is do away with the legal ownership requirement. Just have the requirement of economic ownership for the basis of which you can get the writing down allowance. That's one. Secondly, there is a restrictive list of what constitutes IP, or intellectual property rights, right? And if you look at how COVID has actually panned out, innovation has accelerated. Technology, R&D has accelerated. Actually, it's not slowed down in 2020. It's accelerated and taken on to a new plane. And therefore, in today's environment, when we look at what is important, customer list, customer processes, design, and these sort of are excluded from the list of IPRs. So our suggestion would be to try and include this. Why do we say that? It is because if you start off, expand the list of IPRs, then your ability to create innovation in Singapore or to encourage Singaporean companies to go and acquire these IPs is heightened. That's one.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, if you do away with the requirement of the legal ownership and you only keep the economic ownership, then again, that encourages Singaporean companies to say, okay, we don't need to be the legal owner of this. As long as I'm the economic owner and I can exploit this IP in my own trade and business without going back to the Economic Development Board, then again, that encourages companies to go and have this economic ownership. Because the moment you have a requirement to go back to the Economic Development Board, and they're doing a fantastic job, mind you, I'm not in any way trying to be critical of them, but the mindset is that the Economic Development Board will come back with multiple conditions, requirements, and strings attached with that. And that makes it a little bit more difficult to manage.
Nice.
And therefore, the suggestion is to do away with this legally.
I see where you're coming from. It's really as simple as updating the framework in line with the times, in line with the way, IP
Correct.
Is sort of form or innovation is sort of form right now.
Yeah, a lot of work to be
perhaps,
done.
Perhaps a long-winded answer for your statement.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you covered, I think we had a few questions up our sleeve on it, but I think you've covered them all because it's quite a lot there. Let's just talk about a review of general release for individuals to better reflect the economic environment and current social needs, because these are the things that are really top of mind for a lot of the general population. What is Deloitte proposing in this aspect, especially, amidst working from home scenarios?
Right, and that's a good question because it would impact us also, right? So I think, given the reality of COVID, we've seen, and which was imposed by governments all across, right? Working from home became mandatory because there was a circuit breaker. We really couldn't go back to work. Post-circuit breaker, there was a restriction on the number of people that could go to work, etc. What that actually meant was increase in perhaps utilities cost at home. Secondly, increase in perhaps telecommunication costs at home, whether you're using data, whether you're using Wi-Fi, etc. So all of these are actually increasing the cash outlay of a family. So what we are suggesting is that, why don't we sort of have a fixed percentage of an employment income? Whatever be that percent, it could be 1%, 1.5%, 2% of someone's, employment income, and try and give that as a standard deduction specifically for 2020. Because that's a strange year that happened.
Yeah.
And that would actually help in sort of alleviating some of the cash outlay which the family had incurred earlier. The current scheme that is being sort of introduced by IRAS seems to suggest that you look at what was the expenditure that you had pre-COVID, you look at expenditure that you had post-COVID, and then they are trying to give you a relief. That might actually be a little bit more administratively difficult to administer, because you then need to look at what was my expense before, what's my expense after, look at documentation, as opposed to try and have a fixed percentage, and that might be easier. So at least that's our thinking and our recommendation. I do hope that that comes about, because that would give more help to families.
That's a good one. Rohan, I also want a frontliner tax relief. You think they would accept my proposal?
I hope so.
We've been speaking with Rohan Solapuka, tax partner at Deloitte Singapore. Hey, I really appreciate your time this morning. Take care and stay safe.
Thank you. You too. Stay safe. Stay healthy.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.